Thank you. I'm Gleaves Whitney, director of the Hauenstein Center for Presidential Studies, and I have the honor, the privilege of chairing this panel with three Alpha Plus colleagues, to be sure. They'll be introduced shortly. And we're going to moderate this discussion on traditions of conservatism. To provide some background, I'd like to make four brief points. The first is a perennial concern of conservatives in general and of the Philadelphia Society in particular. It's about the way we hand down a tradition. In his poem, The Prelude, William Wordsworth observed, "What we have loved, others will love, and we will teach them how." Now, reflecting on these lines, our colleague Peter Wehner writes, "Teaching others to love what is worth loving, to have the human heart drawn to what is good and beautiful and true, is the great task for us and the great task of our civilization. If we fail to do it, then even liberty can turn to ashes." Close quote. Now, clearly, Wordsworth is emphasizing the teaching role of the elder generation when handing down a tradition to the younger generation. But about the same time Wordsworth was writing, there was another great poet across the North Sea, Goethe, who was also reflecting on tradition. He put more responsibility than did Wordsworth on the younger generation's role in acquiring tradition, because young people are not just an empty vessel to be filled with the midden of the past. Rather, their task is to bring discernment to tradition, to struggle with it, to master it, and to make what they can their own. The idea in the original German is that each new generation must earn its legacy and not merely inherit it. Now, Wordsworth and Goethe really are showing us two sides of the same coin. Teaching and learning and earning are all needed if a tradition is to live on and help a person grow into a good, beautiful, and true life. The second point concerns how in America since the Second World War, the cultural and political right has been rich with traditions that have succeeded to the extent that they were, taught, learned, earned. And Al Regnery did a great job last night of going through. I can just very quickly say that these traditions in broad outline are anti-communists, traditionalists, libertarians, and then later, as George Nash points out, they were joined by the neoconservatives and the evangelicals. If you throw in fusionists and Straussians and other unlikely allies, you will appreciate the great achievement of William F. Buckley in the pages of National Review and of Ronald Reagan in a political campaign in 1980 to bring this coalition, these allies, together in an exceedingly diverse movement. Third, we should not idealize the olden days, turn them into golden days, and suggest that all was harmonious among these different elements of the conservative movement. Things were especially tense between the Catholic paleocons and the Jewish neocons, many of whom were former Trotskyites. Just how tense that relationship was came to the fore 29 years ago at a Philadelphia Society meeting. The national meeting there in the Drake Hotel in Chicago. I would like a show of hands. How many of you were there in 1986 when at the morning session, a University of Michigan professor, Stephen Tonser, lobbed this now famous grenade at the neocons at that Saturday morning session? I quote, "It has always struck me as odd, even perverse, that former Marxists have been permitted, yes, invited, to play such a leading role in the conservative movement of the 20th century. It is splendid when the town whore gets religion and joins the church. Now and then she makes a good choir director, but when she begins to tell the minister what he ought to say in his Sunday sermons, matters have been carried too far." Now, the reaction to Tonser's speech was immediate, and it was intense. A contributor in the National Review, Jeffrey Hard, said that the intellectual equivalent of gang warfare had broken out in Chicago. One of the nation's preeminent sociologists, Daniel Bell, said that the culture wars were not just between left and right now, but among conservatives themselves, inside our ranks, right here in the heart of the conservative movement in the Philadelphia Society. And yet another wit remarked that the paleocons were performing a tonsurectomy in the body politic of the right. Conflict happens. And yet, and this is my fourth and final point, what is ironic about the infighting among conservatives is that the background of common ground also stands out among all of these conservatives. The different traditions of the right have converged in test after test after test. After the New Deal statism of the 1930s, conservatives were against active liberal statism. After the existential fight against totalitarian regimes in the 1940s, conservatives did seek to shore up Anglo-American traditions of ordered freedom. After the Red Scare of the 1950s, conservatives were unflinchingly anti-communist. And after the coarsening of American society and culture in the 1960s, conservatives did fear the spread of social pathologies. Now, to test the common ground thesis, I went back and looked through Stephen Tonser's papers this last summer at the Hoover Institution. It's interesting to see not just who he was in the limelight of the Philadelphia Society when he wanted to be provocative among friends, but who he was in a more private setting. When he's off stage, writing his letters, for example, to his dear friend Henry Regnery. Tonser revealed that all the different elements of the conservative movement and more resided, guess where? Inside himself. Deep down, he said he believed in freedom and order, individualism and community, natural aristocracy and equality, private enterprise and those human, moral, and cultural values that cannot be defined by the competition in the marketplace. Not only did he acknowledge the tensions within himself and the conservative movement, he made a virtue of them. Quote, "Variety and the dialectic of opposites produce a rich and dynamic society. What is more, the organic reconciliation of opposites is the measure of a healthy society." With Walt Whitman, he said, quote, "Do I contradict myself? Very well, then, I contradict myself. I am large. I contain multitudes." Now, no one in this room would doubt the conservative bona fides of a Stephen Tonser. I would submit that his work challenges us to recognize that conservatism contains multitudes. It contains multitudes because you and I contain multitudes. We are not ideologues, and our anti-ideological stance surely makes us more real, more attractive, and more humane to the rising generation. And that brings me back to the first point about our task to work with the rising generation, to help them discern the multitudes in our traditions, to help them struggle with them, to master them, and to make what plausible harmony of them they can. Only in this way can the traditions of our civilization live on and help souls grow into good, beautiful, and true lives. Now, that's what I wanted to say in my formal comments. Now I have the happy task of introducing my colleagues. We'd like to start with Frank Buckley on the far right, your left. He's the foundation professor at George Mason Law School. He's the author of The Once and Future King, Crown Government in America, which came out, Encounter Books brought it out in 2014. His new book is The Promise of America, Betrayed and Redeemed. Encounter Books is coming out with that book in 2015. And Frank became an American citizen last year on Tax Day, of all days, Tax Day. This afternoon, Professor Buckley will speak to us on the presidency and conservatism. Thank you very much.